Hi, it's Dr. William Renner. Thank you for joining me on this podcast on evidence-based medicine. I'm here with Dr. Alan Safdie, world's expert in GI disease and specialist in nutrition. This is number three in our episode of the microbiome. Today, I want to talk about the heart-gut connection. Alan, can bacteria really influence heart disease?
Yeah. Any other questions, Bill?
No.
Absolutely. The gut microbiome help regulate inflammation, metabolism, and we'll talk about metabolism. People should know that from other agents. You know, some people make more GLP-1s endogenously, which I think I do. But these compounds directly link to vascular disease that our gut microbiome makes. So absolutely, you're right, Bill. It can relate to cardiovascular disease.
Recently I've heard about TMAOs, and they don't sound like a good thing. Can you explain to me what those are?
Short answer is no, they're not good. So, yeah, TMAOs, let me explain what it stands for, are trimethylamine and oxide. So I want you to say that back 10 times, Bill, trimethylamine and oxide. So the TMA part is made in the GI tract, the O occurs in the liver, the oxide is added to it. But why is that important? Higher levels have been associated with atherosclerosis, you know, stuff in your blood vessels, heart attack risk, stroke risk, platelet activation. Platelets are things that make clotting. Inflammation and lining of the blood vessels or endothelial dysfunction. So animal studies suggested, you know, the TMAO may impair cholesterol metabolism and promote these abnormal cells we see in the wall called foam cells and increase plaque development. So it's really created in my field a significant major excitement around the gut-heart connection. You know, these bacteria, certain intestinal bacteria, can convert things into TMAO. So where do you get the precursors of that, which are choline and carnitine and things? You know, eggs, especially the yolk of an egg, not the white of an egg. You know, red meats you're consuming, organ meats especially, some dairy products, even some energy drinks and supplements can do that. But, you know, people are going to get into, hey, I'm now worried about eating an egg, and I wouldn't be. But we can get into that in a second, Bill.
Why has this topic become so controversial, do you think?
Well, it's new. I mean, just the microbiome was controversial. You know, when I started talking about it 10 or 20 years ago, and you go in for a physical, Bill, how many of your doctors have talked about your microbiome?
Only you.
Yeah, I mean, it's still controversial. It takes a while in medicine. You know, I think doctors take a while to evolve, to understand how important this is. So I don't, in my mind, it's not controversial. You know, there's certain paradoxes about TMAO, which is interesting. You know, if you eat a lot of fish, it increases your level, yet fish consumption is consistently shows lower cardiovascular disease. So there's other aspects of it that we're starting to look at. So TMAO may not uniformly be harmful. The dietary context matters. So is an egg, eggs became the most controversial thing. So if you look back at some of the literature, because there were some studies that eggs can increase TMAO in certain individuals. But you know, some individuals produce high levels of TMAO, others do not. And are eggs dangerous? For most people, probably not, as long as done in moderation. There's no evidence that it's dangerous. So those kind of things where in some people they produce higher levels and other people they produce lower levels make it controversial. But eggs are nutrient-dense foods, have a very high-quality protein. They do have choline, which is helpful for brain health, lutein and zeaxanthin. And B12 and selenium. And that choline, we've got some new studies we'll talk about in future podcasts, is essential and important for brain health.
Yeah. I've always been on the impression that eating eggs is good for your brain.
the choline is good for your brain, but is it bad for TMAO production? Probably not for most people, but so potential concerns were TMAO production in susceptible individuals. Doesn't mean you're susceptible or I'm susceptible. But I think the saturated fat makes a greater difference than the egg itself. You know, how you cooked it. If you cooked it in some unhealthy oils. So modern evidence suggests saturated fat patterns and overall diet quality matter much more than intake of cholesterol containing products. So I don't really worry about cholesterol containing products in the diet. I do worry about what they accompany with that. Are they cooked in really unhealthy oils and things? So large studies show moderate egg intake is generally safe for almost all people.
Yeah, we always cook our eggs in olive oil. All right, well, let's get back to the biome and the heart. Does it influence cholesterol?
Yeah.
And cholesterol metabolism?
Absolutely. You know, the microbiome influences so many things. We find lots of things constantly of what it does influence. And, you know, associations with things make a difference. So the better the microbiome is, the healthier those things are, including possibly lipid, your lipid profile. It's not the same as saying, I'm going to give you a statin drug. That's going to really lower, you know, your LDL cholesterol much more significantly than changing your microbiome. So it doesn't have the kind of effects that a statin does or some of the newer agents we have for improving your lipid profile.
And what about affecting blood pressure?
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely, you know, it goes along. Just the Mediterranean diet itself, which improves your microbiome, may improve your blood pressure. All the things we talked about that improve the microbiome also will improve your blood pressure. The exercise, which improves your microbiome. The colorful Mediterranean or New Nordic type diets that will improve your microbiome. The prebiotics, the probiotics, all those things.
All right, let's go to another topic. The British Heart Foundation recently warned about kimchi, the intake of kimchi. Tell me about that.
I think that's something that I hate to discuss because I don't really agree with it.
Let's hear why you don't agree with it.
Well, I mean, most of the population, so if you look at the Korean population that eat a lot of kimchi, they don't have any of the risk factors that they're talking about. So it's something that I don't agree with. And they looked at it from a biochemical basis rather than a clinical basis. So what we want to look at is epidemiologic studies and a clinical basis. Epidemiologically, I have not had any problem with that. You know, what the problems with kimchi and sauerkraut and kombucha and flavored yogurts may not be that. It's the sodium intake. It's the sugar intake associated with them. So a lot of these are high in sugar or high in sodium.
You actually eat kimchi.
I actually eat kimchi, but I don't eat sugar. So mine have very little sugar. I don't have sugars in kombucha. I don't have flavored yogurts. I have Greek yogurt, and I put my own berries and things in. Smoothies are high in sugar. I mean, most of them are high in sugar. Eat the whole fruit. If you're going to make a smoothie, blend it with the whole fruit, not with the fruit juice. That's why it's hard. The reason I don't agree with it is when they wrote that, they didn't differentiate. Was it the sodium intake? Was it the sugar intake? Was it the other parts of that that could be deleterious? And that's what I believe. It's not the kimchi in itself. And epidemiologically, these are very healthy foods.
And fiber. Does fiber slow glucose absorption?
Absolutely. It feeds your gut bacteria. Doesn't just slow glucose, but it causes short chain fatty acids, which, you know, as you eat, the fiber is not feeding you, Bill. As I said earlier, the fiber is feeding our microbiome. So I'm eating a tablespoon of very dense, non-absorbable fiber. It's not soluble, and it's feeding not me, it's feeding the bacteria within me. And those help with cholesterol metabolism, insulin sensitivity, inflammation, satiety, how quick you feel full. My diet is extremely dense in fiber, and I don't think I ever really feel full, but I eat quite a bit. But it does help in regards to the metabolic portions of my diet.
Yeah, I know you eat oatmeal for breakfast.
My breakfast every day is oatmeal, but not processed oats. So either steel cut oats or the unprocessed oats for 40 years, longer. And along with chia seeds, flax seeds, sometimes hemp seeds, along with cinnamon, along with some fresh berries, and a greenish banana, not an overly ripe yellow banana ever.
Because
when you eat a very yellow banana with the brown spots on it, does it taste sweeter?
Yes.
A lot sweeter. Because you're breaking down the complex carbohydrates in that into simple sugars. So what do you want to consume in your diet? The complex carbohydrates, not the simple sugars. So one that's overly ripe, it's overly sweet, has most of those complex carbs broken down into constituent simple sugars. But that's been my diet forever, along with then Greek yogurt to follow that, and often, a multigrain bagel or two pieces of whole wheat toast with olive oil. So pretty boring diet, hasn't really changed forever, but it's easy.
So from a practical point of view, what foods support both the heart and the gut?
Most, things that support the heart potentially are the very colorful diet. Blueberries definitely support the brain. Cinnamaldehyde may support the brain in our animal studies. So not just foods, but spices can do that. Green tea may support the brain. Coffee may support the brain and the heart. Both, all of these, coffee being the number one consumed antioxidant in the United States. And then all of these fresh fruits, vegetables, and compounds, and avoiding as much as possible foods that are dense in pesticides. Look at the Dirty Dozen, or even go 12 foods past that and try to avoid those in your diet. And the most important things for your heart and your brain is avoid ultra-processed foods. Avoid taking in too much simple sugar. So usually I tell people, 100 calories per day for a woman, 150 calories per day in simple sugars would be okay. But that's through your whole day. So a piece of dark chocolate, that's got some simple sugars in it. So if it's 70% dark, it's, 30% of that is sugar. So you can consume that. It doesn't take much to get up to 100 calories of simple sugars in your diet. So my goal is close to zero. I do have some dark chocolate every day that's 70%, which is the way I get some of my simple sugars in the diet. But added sugars are not a good idea. Sugars within the foods themselves, that's fine because you have complex carbs, it slows the absorption. So sugars in a blueberry or an apple are fine. Apple juice absolutely shouldn't be consumed, in my opinion.
Let me ask you about the evidence about social media. We hear a lot of social media hype versus the evidence. What's your impression of that?
There's a whole bunch of people out there that want to live forever that are throwing a lot of money about it, and it's basically, I don't agree with the process of that. I mean, their whole life is sitting there trying to biohack their way into longevity. Should we all have, red light therapy in our houses? Should we all have a hyperbaric oxygen chamber in our house? Well, most people can't afford that. But we all should have simple things that don't sound good on social media. We all should be exercising. We all should be doing resistance exercises. We all should be doing balance exercises. We all should be cognitively active in our life. We all should be eating healthy. and there's certain supplements that we'll talk about that we did with the Dean Ornish study look promising, but they're very low dose. Some of these people are taking, in social media, they're trying to sell their own supplement brands. Not evidence-based medicine. When somebody says it's clinically researched, that doesn't mean that it had positive outcomes. So a lot of social media stuff will say, this substance was clinically researched. When you say it's clinically researched, that doesn't mean anything. I could take that glass of water and say, here, drink it, how do you feel? That was suddenly clinically researched. So be very careful what's on social media.
Alan, thank you so much. It's a great discussion of the microbiome. I know our next topic is microplastics, nanoplastics, and the gut, and I'm anxious to hear about that.
Thank you, Bill. Have a good day.